T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hope you get through the day. No obstacles, no disruption. Talk about the Grizzlies, because that's what we're going to do in this opening segment. Local NBA franchise that needs to add front office executives and eventually a head coach. But I wouldn't be in any rush to even start thinking too much about head coaches. We'll talk about that momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 420, Joe Mullinex is site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. One of the best and brightest at discussing and writing about the Grizzlies. He's going to join me in 20 minutes. We'll talk about the Grizzlies. When I finish that segment, I'll do 4 notable stories at 4:44, at which point I'm going to discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories. Among them, the NBA playoffs continued last night. Home teams won all 3 games. Raptors killed the Magic. Blazers killed the Thunder. Nuggets outscored the Spurs 39-23 in the fourth quarter, even that series 1-1. We'll talk last night's NBA playoffs around 4:44. LSU Athletic Director Joe Oliva is reportedly stepping down. So that should make LSU fans happy. Hard to know what it means for Will Wade, but we'll get into it a little later on this hour. Yesterday, I told you Christian Yelich had hit 7 homers in 5 games against the Cardinals so far this season. He played a 6th game against the Cardinals last night. He had another homer last night, so that made 8 homers in 6 games against the St. Louis Cardinals, straight killing them. I'll tell you about that just before 5 o'clock. And the Tampa Bay Lightning have been eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, swept by something called the Columbus Blue Jackets, even though they won 62 games this season, which was 12 more wins than anybody else in the NHL and a number that tied for the most wins in NHL history. I don't know anything about hockey, but this is, by all accounts, like a crazy turn of events, so I'll tell you a little bit about that during 4 notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I want to start with the Memphis Grizzlies, because we're still less than a week removed from them firing J.B. Bickerstaff, reassigning John Hollinger, reassigning Chris Wallace, and less than a week removed from them acknowledging that we're not just going to stand pat here and rearrange chairs on the deck. We are going to bring in outside basketball people. And my understanding is they're working on doing that right now, because if you are going to bring in outside basketball people, you do want to have it. You do want to have them in place, I would think, before you start doing pre-draft workouts, before you start really diving into the draft process, assuming, of course, that you're going to pick in the first round of the 2019 NBA draft, which is only an assumption. The most likely scenario, of course, is that they convey the pick to Boston. But there is also a scenario where they pick first or second, or third, or fourth, or eighth. That's really the only options. But you could pick in the top 4. You could pick 8th, or you won't pick at all. Now, if you're picking first, there's really, you don't even need any basketball people. Like, any of us could make that pick. That's the best position to be in, not only because you know who you're taking, not only because you get Zion Williamson, but it's because you don't even have to think about it. You just draft Zion Williamson. It's over. Like, there's nothing to discuss. It's like in 2003, if you win the lottery, you know what you're doing. You're taking LeBron James. There's nothing to talk about. In 2012, you win the lottery. You know what you're doing. You're taking Anthony Davis. There's nothing to talk about. In just about every other draft in the past, I don't know, 20 years, it hasn't been as clear. There does often a consensus emerges about a certain player. It was DeAndre Ayton last year. But, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, that looks wrong. It looks like you'd have probably taken Luka Doncic instead. If you could do it over again, maybe even Jaren Jackson Jr., if you could do it over again. Maybe even Trae Young, if you could do it over again.
Yeah.
And I guess I should point out that there's a scenario where we look up in 4 years and Zion Williamson's not the best prospect from this draft. Like, that could happen. But the possibility of that is not going to make anybody think for more than 2 seconds about who they're going to select if they've got the number 1 pick. The pick will be Zion Williamson. So if you win the lottery, I don't guess it's that important to have basketball people. But anything other than that, if you're picking second, third, or fourth, or eighth, you're going to have to make real decisions. Not easy decisions. And you'd probably want your basketball people in place to go through that process with you and help you on draft night. Again, if you're picking, secure the rights to the right person, because that's how good teams are often built. But as for the head coach, I don't know that there's any urgency to that at all. In fact, I think the opposite's probably true. And I bring this up because I was listening to Jeff and Calkins and Chris Harrington talk this morning. They were talking about all of this stuff. And also Joe Mullinex at GrizzlyBearBlues.com has done a series on, you know, if you want to make the phone call these three head coaching candidates. And but once you realize you can't get them, probably, like, these are some more realistic candidates. And I'll talk to him about them here in the next segment. But the job that the Grizzlies can put on the table for somebody right now is possibly vastly different than the job the Grizzlies are going to be able to put on the table, you know, in the middle of next month.
Yeah.
Because though it is unlikely, there is a chance you could win the lottery. And that means there's a chance you could put a job on a table that is centered on coaching two of the best teenage talents in the world, in Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zion Williamson. That's a job that would be intriguing for obvious reasons. But the job in its current form, not that intriguing to anybody with good options for obvious reasons. One is the team's been bad, going to stay bad, and there's no reason to think it's going to get good anytime soon if you don't add a dynamic piece by getting lucky like Zion Williamson. In other words, let's break this down by the best case scenario on lottery night and another scenario on lottery night. The best case scenario is you win the lottery and you're going to be able to select Zion Williamson. And then you're going to be able to take that job, put it on the table for coaching candidates. Say, hey, you know, we're still in a rebuild situation, but my God, there's not another franchise in this league that's got two better teenagers than the two teenagers we've got, Zion Williamson and Jaren Jackson Jr. That'll make head coaching candidates with other options look at you. But if the Grizzlies, the lottery shakes out the way it shakes out and the Grizzlies end up conveying the pick to Boston, well then who's interested in this job if you've got other good options? The job could be building around Jaren Jackson Jr., Zion Williamson, and maybe you keep Mike Conley around to be a mentor to those two teenage phenoms. Maybe Valanciunas is back. Maybe you've got a team that can actually be kind of interesting. But either way, if it can't be interesting immediately, you still got Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zion Williamson. That's an attractive job. But if you end up conveying the pick, then you don't add any fascinating young phenom to this roster. You might probably end up moving Mike Conley. Who knows what happens with Valanciunas? That's a different job. In other words, if you started trying to talk to head coaching candidates right now, the same people who wouldn't be interested in you right now would be interested in you if you won the lottery. You can really change your job that drastically just by getting lucky. It reminds me of the scenario the Cavaliers were in back in, you know, around this same time, April, May, June of 2014. They needed a coach. And if my memory is correct, they offered that job to Tom Izzo. He turned it down. They offered that job to Bill Self. He turned it down. I think they offered the job to John Calipari. He turned it down. They couldn't get anybody to take the job because the job that they were presenting at that moment was not an attractive job. The team had been in the lottery year after year after year since LeBron James had left the first time. And then suddenly, LeBron James opts out of his contract in Miami. That leads to speculation that maybe, just maybe, he's going to come back to Cleveland. And then ultimately, he signs a contract with the Cleveland Cavaliers. any of the men who turned that job down a month or 2 or 3 months earlier would have taken the job then. But the job was no longer available then because they'd already signed David Blatt. They reached a deal with David Blatt before LeBron James made it clear that he was coming back to Cleveland. If they'd have just waited to hire a coach until they knew exactly what was going on with LeBron, then if they really wanted Tom Izzo, they could have got him.
Yeah.
If they really wanted John Calipari, I think they could have got him. If they really wanted Bill Self, I think they could have got him. In other words, they ended up hiring, and I'm not trying to tell you John or Tom or Bill would have been better than David Blatt. I have no idea. But the Cavs preferred them as candidates to over David Blatt, evidence being that the job was offered to them first. The job fell to David Blatt. And if they'd have just waited to know exactly what job are we offering here? Are we offering a LeBron James job or a no LeBron James job? Because the no LeBron James job, that's we're going to have to hire David Blatt. But the we got LeBron James job, that's one we can get Tom Izzo if we really want Tom Izzo. Like, I remember talking to Tom later in that summer. And we were sitting together at some AAU event, you know, some gym, 8 in the morning. And he was joking. I want to be clear. I don't want this to end up on Michigan State message board. He was joking.
Joking around.
But he was like, how stupid am I? I could be coaching LeBron James right now and not sitting here in this gym with you.
Unbelievable.
Not sitting here in this gym with you watching 16-year-olds. I could be coaching LeBron. I could be LeBron James' coach.
Man.
And, like, well, he laughed. He was like.
It's a different job.
Well, you can't. Like, he didn't want the job without LeBron James.
Right.
But with LeBron James.
Different job.
Okay, I'll go coach LeBron James.
Yeah.
Like, because coaching LeBron James, at least for that period of time, that made you a winning coach.
Yeah.
It made you a coach who was going to compete for world championships. Now, it didn't make you immune from getting fired because David Blatt still got fired. Mm-hmm. But it automatically was going to allow you to build your resume.
Mm-hmm.
You can think whatever you want to think about David Blatt. Go look at his record. Record's really good. Why? Because he's coaching a team with LeBron James in his prime.
Right.
Everybody's record coaching LeBron James in his prime is good. Any coach who coached LeBron James in his prime is good. Now, coach might still got fired, just like David Blatt did, but if you coached LeBron James in that time, there was no way for you not to be successful. Tom Izzo knew that. Yeah. Bill Self knew that. John Calipari knew that. That's why I think all three of them would have taken the job if it was offered to them when LeBron James was a part of it. But the time when it was offered to them, there was no LeBron James in the picture. So John's like, I'll just stay at Kentucky. And Bill's like, I'll just stay at Kansas. Tom's like, I'll just stay at Michigan State. Because they knew at those three places, they're going to, it's a different job than coaching in the NBA, but they're still well compensated and they're going to win because they can build their own rosters. Why do I want to go to Cleveland and lose 50 games? That seems miserable. And given that John had already done it once in New Jersey, he knew how miserable it would be. And I'm not saying Cleveland made a mistake by hiring too soon. I'm just saying they hired somebody they would not have hired by hiring too soon. That job's a different job with LeBron James. Similarly, if the Grizzlies went out and hired the best coach they could get today or next week or any point before the lottery, they would be hiring a lesser coach, a lesser candidate, I should say.
Yep.
A lesser candidate than they would be able to hire if they waited till the lottery and then actually won the lottery and then presented that job.
Mm-hmm.
The same agents who would call you back now and say, yeah, I appreciate you being interested, but that just doesn't sound like it's good for my client,
mm-hmm.
would be calling you the night of the lottery saying, are you interested in my client?
I got a guy.
I got a guy.
Yeah.
Or I got a gal.
Or, right.
We're interested in your job. Yeah. We weren't interested in the no-pick, Valanciunas gone, Mike Conley traded job. That didn't sound like a good job. But Zion Williamson / Jaren Jackson Jr. / Mike Conley's going to hang around / Valanciunas is back as well?
Yeah.
No, that sounds like a job we could be interested in. And so, obviously, Jason Wexler and his front office can handle this however they want. But if I were them, I'd be spending my time right now focusing on front office people and not on coaches at all, because I might have a totally different job to offer somebody a month from now than I've actually got right now. Talk to Joel Mullinex about it next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This ain't a wave or a phase, because all that fades. This lifestyle's forever when you made. They tweet about the length.
NBA playoffs in full swing. Portland handled Oklahoma City last night. Russell Westbrook, just 5 of 20 from the field. He's now just 1 of 10 in 2 games against Portland so far in these NBA playoffs. And it appears we've settled on him as the superstar we're going to bash over and over again. Get into that in the next segment. Jeff Coggins will join me at 5 o'clock, but right now he is the site manager for SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. It's Joe Mullinex making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Joe, it's Gary. How you doing, man?
I'm trying to keep busy. I'm on spring break, being a teacher and football coach. So I've dove into the deep end when it comes to the blog, putting out a lot of content, hashtag content, over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. So hopefully folks are checking out the site.
I hope so. I certainly checked out the site earlier today. And one of the pieces you've done is a series on possible next head coaches for the Grizzlies. And you did one post on, like, some long shots. But, like, if you want to call them, call them. And that list includes Becky Hammon and Brent Berry and Tony Bennett. And then you did another list with some more reasonable options. And that included Sam Cassell and Dan Burke and Jacques Vaughn. We're going to get into those in a minute. But I opened on sort of my belief that trying to hire a head coach right now is unwise for the Grizzlies, because the type of coach you could hire today is not the same type of coach you could hire a month from now if you happen to get lucky in the lottery. I compared it a little bit to in 2014, Cleveland was looking for a coach, and they got turned down by a whole bunch of people, and then they just went ahead and hired David Blatt. And then, like, 3 weeks after that, LeBron James decided he's coming back to Cleveland. If they would have just waited another 3 weeks, they could have hired basically any of the people that turned them down previously, because now it's a LeBron James job as opposed to you're probably going to lose 45, 50 games job. I don't know that the Grizzlies is that obviously different. Like, Zion Williamson is not LeBron James, certainly not at this age. But if you have a job to offer that includes Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zion Williamson, that's a different job than the job they could offer right now. And it's why I think if I were Jason Wexler, I'd probably slow play this a little bit.
Oh, I agree completely. And I mentioned in the article that I hope that we're getting to the same result. I want them to interview a ton of different people. I want them to meet with different folks. I want them to pick the brains of a lot of people that are smart, that are from all different walks of the basketball world, so that they can kind of compare how they've been doing the past few years, how others do them, and try to learn from the process. So I don't want them to hire anybody in the next day, week, or even month. I'm with you on the timeline of even past the lottery. I want them to hire somebody before the draft. I think that's important. You want somebody in that room who you know what the scheme is going to be. You know what the goal is on both ends of the floor with your new coach. So I think it's good to have that in place by the draft, but there's definitely no rush in the here and now. And they should be taking their time, because they have to figure out exactly how they're going to proceed. Do they want a lifer, an NBA lifetime assistant like a Dan Burke? Do they want a Sam Cassell who, between playing and coaching, has been in the league for 25 years? Do they want to take a shot on somebody like a Tony Bennett or a Becky Hammon or a Brent Berry? Do they want to try a retread? You know, I mentioned Jacques Vaughn in my article, but it could be any retread. I just liked Vaughn because of what he's done with the Brooklyn Nets. You could do Mike Brown. You could do Mark Jackson. There's all sorts of different names that are floating out there that would get to the same result, even David Blatt, who you mentioned a moment ago. So we're getting to the same end just by different means. I definitely want them to take their time as well. There's no rush on this.
I'm with you. Like, have a coach in place before the draft, but not until after the lottery. Because right now you're offering a job that, let's be honest, probably isn't that attractive to anybody with good options. But if you win the lottery, then you could offer somebody a job that includes Zion Williamson. Let's say you finish second in the lottery. Well, you can offer somebody a job that includes Jaren Jackson Jr. and also either Ja Morant or R.J. Barrett. Or third. Or you know, it's a vastly different job in the short term, and I think probably in the long term, if you are conveying a pick or you're picking first. And I know it's unlikely they're going to pick first, but it is possible. And that's why I would wait till after the lottery to even seriously consider offering a job to my next coach. I'm talking to Joe Mullinex here, GrizzlyBearBlues.com. You mentioned some long shots, and on that list is Becky Hammon. Every time somebody tweets the name Becky Hammon, you get some pretty, all over the place results. On one hand, she's a Popovich assistant, and Popovich assistants all seem to always get opportunities. On the other hand, she is more famous than she otherwise would be because she's a woman. Let's just be honest. Most people wouldn't know her name if she were just a man on Greg Popovich's staff. I gather you're a big fan of hers. Why?
I'm a big fan of hers because I think that she is one of the first women, and obviously Nancy Lieberman and others fit this bill as well. But Becky Hammon, of course, a little bit younger in terms of her place in coaching at this stage and at this time in 2019, when it seems like more and more places are itching to give women these opportunities in these male-dominated career fields. I think that you're looking at a situation with Becky where she has the Popovich connection, as you mentioned, and I think that's pretty attractive. She is somebody who I quote in my post over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Quincy Pondexter, who came out and credited her with changing his perspective on the game of basketball. And you hear more and more male players saying that they're interested in playing for her, or they like playing for her, not because she's attractive, not because she's somebody that they could see themselves in a relationship with. There's no courting going on here, 1960 style. This is a situation where they like her as a basketball mind. And I think that she is kind of a right place, right time situation. I definitely agree with you. I mean, I'll use a name from how many people that read my article today knew who Dan Burke was? Probably not very many, but if you look Dan Burke's resume and the fact that he's coached with six different head coaches from Larry Bird all the way to Nate McMillan, all sorts of different people in between, he's had to shut down literally everyone from Michael Jordan to LeBron James. His resume is far more impressive than Becky Hammond's, but chances are you have no idea who Dan Burke is, and you do know who Becky Hammon is. So that plays into the point that they're making. I like it because it's an opportunity for Memphis to make history. I like it because you're giving an opportunity to somebody who I think has earned the opportunity, not as much as the others that I mentioned. And in fairness, I would prefer, especially for a Grizzlies organization that needs a little more stability. I had Chris Vernon of Grind City Media on my podcast, UBB Live, today, and he talked about wanting somebody with some experience because bringing in a lifelong assistant hasn't worked so far for Memphis, and he's not wrong about that. I like Dan Burke and I like Sam Cassell because they're NBA lifers, but a retread even, like a Jacques Vaughn, a Mike Brown, a Mark Jackson, I would take any of those types over Becky at this point because I think Becky needs a perfect situation to have full success, and she's not going to get that in Memphis right now for a variety of reasons, both on and off the court.
I agree with that, especially the last part. And I think Becky taking a job, she will be an NBA head coach one day. I do believe that.
Right.
But it's going to have to be really something close to a perfect situation. And here's why. And I think I know people who know her, and they say she understands this. She's not just fighting for her career. Her success or failure is going to tell a story, and this isn't right or fair, but it is the way it's going to go down. If she fails, you know, even in a job that any other man they would have hired fails, it'll be, see, this is why you can't have a woman as a head coach. You know,
right.
Her first job has to be something where she's set up for success because she really is telling a story larger than her own personal story. Like if, Sam Cassell gets a job, then he's either going to do it or not do it, and it'll be strictly about Sam Cassell. But for Becky Hammon, it'll be about a woman's ability to coach in that league. If she does it, it's well. People will say, see, I told you so. It hasn't been any problem, and she's actually really, really good. This is why front offices should be open-minded, more open-minded than they are. If she fails, people are going to say, see, this is what happens. This is why we told you not to do it. Again, that's not fair or right, but it is the way this thing's going to go down.
Absolutely. I agree with that completely. And I think it's important to point out that that perfect situation will be more likely for her as she gains more experience under Pop and as she develops what her voice will be in a male-dominated huddle as she becomes that first female head coach. I agree with you. It's going to happen. I just don't think Memphis is the right spot for that to occur. You know, in theory, San Antonio would be the spot for it to occur once Popovich retires, whenever that may be. But he has other assistants on that bench. Messina comes to mind, for example, that may be in line before her. So I don't see it happening in Memphis. I think that she's worthy of an interview. I would like, again, to pick her brain. She's in a unique situation. But you hit the nail on the head. She's not just doing this for Becky Hammon. She's doing this for WNBA rookies right now who 20 years from now want to continue to have a career in basketball, and they don't want to be a WNBA coach. They want to be an NBA coach. So it's not just about her. It's about generations beyond her, and she has to get it right, right or wrong.
I'm talking to Joe Mullinex here from GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He's on Twitter, at Joe Mullinex. You mentioned that the Grizzlies haven't had a good history with, you know, assistants coaching full-time head coaches. They're getting their first jobs in Memphis. It's been a long list. I mean, it's Mark Iveroni. It's Lionel had served as an interim before, but he had never been a full-time head coach before he got the Grizzlies job in 2009. Dave Yeager, of course, had never been an NBA coach before he got the job in Memphis. Fizz had never been an NBA coach before he got the job in Memphis. JB had never been an NBA coach before he got the job in Memphis. The last time the Grizzlies, tell me if this is right, had a full-time head coach who had previously been a head coach at a full-time level, was it Mike Fratello?
Possibly. That sounds right. That checks out. If somebody listening has a different about right.
I mean, that's more than a decade ago. Like Fratello was 2004 to 2006, and so maybe, I mean, you know, I heard Chris Harrington say earlier today on Jeff's show that they think they need to hire somebody with previous head coaching experience. I think that, and it's unfair to say because every hire they've made hasn't worked out. Because I think you can reasonably say Lionel Hollins worked out, and I think you can reasonably say Dave Yeager was doing a good job. They just, you know, didn't want him here anymore or wouldn't commit to him long term. But certainly the last two have been mixed results, and perhaps you do just need to hire somebody different than what you've been hiring.
I think the logic behind it is sound in that at least that's one less box that you have to check off. If you hire somebody, let's use Sam Cassell. I would like to see him get the job. I think he's the perfect combination of playing experience, won multiple championships, and coaching. He's been an assistant for over a decade now under first Flip Saunders and now Doc Rivers out with the Clippers. I think he's a good combination of what they're looking for. But, again, we mentioned how Memphis is not a perfect situation. That's regardless of gender. You know, Becky Hammon has a lot to deal with outside of the court in terms of, like we mentioned, she's doing it not just for her but for everybody else that wants to be in her shoes someday. Sam Cassell is doing it essentially for him and his career. It's his first real opportunity. Memphis is not a perfect spot for that. There's a lot of things that have to hit, whether it's, you know, the convey or not convey question that'll be settled in May, as we talked about earlier, whoever they do decide to draft, the future of Mike Conley, you know, Jonas Valanciunas' opt-in eventually. There was some confusion about that on Twitter today, but that has to be settled at some point. So there's a lot of variables that kind of go into what the next coach is going to get. And if you hire somebody who at least has previous head coaching experience, and I make this argument for Jacques Vaughn, that is something where you no longer have to necessarily concern yourself with, okay, do they know how to run a practice? Do they know how to have a schedule lined up for pregame? Do they know the proper way of executing out-of-timeout plays? And do we have physical evidence on film of them actually doing it? Can they go up on a board or in front of a big screen and show us why they did what they did? with an assistant who's never been a head coach before, you don't necessarily have that. With somebody who, whether they succeeded or failed as a head coach, and most of the guys that would be those retreads that they may hire, ultimately failed, you can talk to them about why they failed and what they learned from it. And I think that's extremely valuable for these guys. They have experience that a Fizdale, a Yeager, even a Holland before him, all these guys didn't necessarily have, and they can apply that experience and the lessons learned from their failure in their second chance in Memphis. And Memphis has been a place of opportunity for second and third chances for players. Why not for coaches? So the logic is sound there as well.
Also, like, big picture, you could be going into the 2019-20 season with a person running your basketball franchise who's never run it before, a person running the basketball side of stuff for the first time ever, and then a coach, being a head coach in the NBA for the first time ever. I'm not saying that can't work, but, man, it's a lot of question marks.
A lot of question marks, and, again, you're setting yourself up for a lot of things that have to go right. And for the roster itself, you're already in that spot. So to hire somebody who has that experience, like I said, who isn't necessarily having to figure out how to do this on the fly, and you can take that out of the equation, they can focus on developing Jaren Jackson Jr., which should be one of the main focuses, if not the main focus, whoever the head coach is going to be. They can focus on figuring out what they have in Ivan Rabb and Dylan Brooks and all of these younger players that likely will be on the roster that you're going to have to make decisions on in the coming years in terms of if you want to invest in them or not. So it's less focus on the day-to-day operations and more focus on the actual basketball if you bring in somebody who at least has had that head coaching experience at some point.
Talking to Joe Mullinex from GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He's on Twitter at Joe Mullinex. I haven't talked to you since last week when the Grizzlies fired J.B. Bickerstaff, reassigned John Hollinger, reassigned Chris Wallace, promoted Jason Wexler, promoted Zach Kleiman. Just your general thoughts on what they did and how they did it.
It had to happen. I do think that it had to happen, and most folks, I believe, agree with that. Chris Vernon, who obviously has a longstanding relationship with Chris Wallace on our podcast, said as much. You know, you can't make the mistakes that were made and expect for nothing to occur. There has to be accountability at some point, and I think they finally did. I'm sure there's a right way to do it, because if they had fired immediately after on Wednesday, this is a pretty quick turnaround, you got to remember. I believe availability, and then you have players that pose questions about Wallace and staff instead of what they need to focus on in the offseason. And I listen to your guys' shows, and, you know, you all have personal relationships. He's been in that community for a very long time, and you obviously have J.B. Bickerstaff, who lots of people kind of see as the good soldier who kind of went down with the ship a little bit here. I didn't have as much of an issue with them going out for the end availability. To me, that's end-of-season availability. They were ending their season before their own exit interview. But at the same time, I understand the perspective, and it looks bad. You know, it was pretty bad to see Chris Wallace talking about J.B. Bickerstaff is going to be safe, and then 6 hours later, he wasn't. And it just shows a lack of communication in the organization that, again, we've had inklings of throughout the season and even beyond this past season. But it just further confirmed it, and it showed that it was broken and it needed to try to be repaired. It probably could have been done in a better way, and I think Kleiman and Wexler have said as much in the future or in the events that followed their sit downs with various media outlets. But at the same time, the ends justify the means to me to an extent. It had to be done. There's not really a good way to do it. It was sad to see that happen to Wallace and Bickerstaff, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But at the same time, and maybe you can help me, Gary, I couldn't think of a better way. Like I said, if you did it right after the game, now your end-of-season availability isn't on the end-of-season availability of the players. It's about the actions that happened 12 hours before. So I think they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place on that.
Oh, I will concede there were no great options, but I would have done it the night before or the morning of. I wouldn't have had, to me, the worst option. No good options. But from my perspective, the worst option is actually the one that they used, which is March JB and Chris out there under the assumption that they're both coming back, have JB conduct player exit interviews, and then fire them, you know, the same afternoon. To me, I acknowledge there are no great ways to handle that, but I feel like the way they actually handled it was the worst way, if only because it put You know, I know they were concerned about their players having to answer a bunch of questions about Chris Wallace being reassigned and JB being fired, but like they're all grown men, you know, who are multimillionaires. They've answered tough questions before. I feel like letting them handle that however they would have handled it was preferable to sending Chris out there looking like a fool and JB out there looking like a fool. But whatever, that was last week and it's done. Last thing before I let you go. I think people here, myself included, are optimistic, cautiously optimistic, but optimistic that this is going to work out. But I think we can also acknowledge that this is incredibly unusual to have, you know, a 30-year-old lawyer with almost no basketball background essentially being the second most powerful person in your NBA franchise. Are you skeptical at all? When you hear that Wexler is now the president of the Grizzlies and Zach Kleiman is now essentially making big basketball decisions, even though, you know, he's a 30-year-old lawyer who has no traditional basketball background, does that make you nervous at all?
Not when it comes to Jason Wexler. I think that if you are familiar with him, I know you are, Gary, but sure. Anybody who's followed the organization, who has seen the business side of things, the way that he carries himself, Jason Wexler can sell Memphis. He is a Memphian. He believes in Memphis. And if they were trying to bleed out interest in the Grizzlies in Memphis, they wouldn't have hired Jason Wexler. They wouldn't have promoted him. I have complete and total faith in his ability to regain the trust of the fan base, but he has to have something to sell. And to me, if you're going to be nervous, it's with Kleiman, the 30-year-old, who, goodness gracious, is younger than me. I'm getting old, I guess. We're talking about somebody being so young, and he's younger than me. But you at his situation, whoever they hired next, whether it's Richard Cho, somebody else that they bring in that helps him kind of wade through the waters of the bureaucratic exploits of being in an NBA front office, dealing with agents, contract negotiations, that sort of stuff, he's going to need help with those things. And I think to his credit, he has admitted openly that he has not earned anything. You know, he's kind of gotten this opportunity through hard work within one particular organization, and then obviously beyond that with his internships and other things elsewhere. But he's fallen into this opportunity, and he needs to make the most of it, and it's going to have to come down to making people buy into what you are trying to be, and it has to be more than just potential. You know, I think that it's an educated guess. It's a calculated risk to bet on somebody who's talented, who you know will work hard, who is committed to trying to build this thing in the way that you want it built. But at the same time, you have to have somebody there that can help him, like I said, navigate the waters of an NBA front office. You can talk about the numbers and analytics and how you want to build the roster in a smart, in air quotes, way all you want, but the fact still remains this team doesn't have an identity, and it has to come from the organization. It has to come from whoever they hire to be their head coach. The on-the-court product is not going to improve until, A, they get more talent, obviously, but B, and even more important than that to me, is how you get these players and how you get this community and how you get the organization as a whole to buy into whatever it is you're going to be. Memphis is not, outside of winning the lottery and getting Zion Williamson, elite talent, it's not going to get there overnight. It's going to be a process. How you build this thing back up is going to come from what it means to be a Memphis Grizzly. You have to reestablish what that means. It's not grit and grind. That's gone. That's done. And I think that they realize that now, that reinvestment in that was a mistake. But they have to figure out what they're going to be, because if they don't have that, it doesn't matter how smart their officers are. It doesn't matter how powerful their computers and the machine might be. None of that matters if they don't have players that buy into what they're trying to do, and if they don't have a fan base that believes there's a direction. I think they've taken a good step forward in that regard, but there's still a lot of miles to travel to earn back a lot of that trust.
That is Joe Mullinex, a site manager, SB Nation's GrizzlyBearBlues.com. He's the host of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. You can listen to that on Blog Talk Radio. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Joe Mullinex. That's at Joe Mullinex. Terrific as always. Thanks for being here, buddy.
Thank you, GP. Appreciate it.
I'll see you. Bye-bye. That's Joe Mullinex here on 92.9 FM. ESPN. Got a question from TJ on Twitter. He says, to your point about waiting until after the lottery to hire a coach, don't you at the same time limit yourself to who you can sell the job to? He says, before the lottery, you could lobby, hey, we may have a top 8 pick coming in, 26% at a top 4, so on and so forth. I'll answer that question right after we get back from this break.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way.
Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with GameTip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Jeff Cock is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's four notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
So the NBA playoffs continued last night, and obviously we got three more games tonight. But the late game last night was Portland, Oklahoma City, and Portland went on to win it 114-94. And they did it while Russell Westbrook was not good, while Damian Lillard was awesome. Westbrook was only 5 of 20 from the field, 1 of 6 from three-point range, finished with 14 points, 11 assists, 9 rebounds. It's the guy who averaged a triple-double in the regular season for the third straight year, and he's been struggling so far in this series against Portland. He's shooting just 35% from the field, 10% from three-point range, and now just Google Russell Westbrook. He's just getting killed by everybody. I saw Colin Cowherd do a segment today. Insisting, you know, Russell Westbrook just isn't built for the playoffs. I don't know about that. Well, clearly he hasn't been good in these two games.
No.
But all he's done is lose two games to a better team.
On the road.
On the road.
Right.
You know, like, what?
It's crazy.
He's a guy who is an MVP just, you know, a few years ago.
Right.
Has averaged a triple-double.
Yeah.
Is undeniably awesome. And because what? Like, somebody has to lose these games.
Right.
I'm always interested in why people draw these grand conclusions. Like, if Russell Westbrook was up 2-0 on Portland, would it mean Damian Lillard's not built for?
Yeah, he's like, just terrible now.
How about they're both awesome?
Yeah.
But one is playing on a better team.
At home.
And one is, relatively speaking, struggling right now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean he's not awesome. It just means he's struggling right now. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens when they get this series back to Oklahoma City. But Portland up 2-0 and apparently, Russell Westbrook is, like, lucky to even be in the NBA anymore.
Story number two.
LSU has confirmed that Joe Oliva is stepping down. He's been the wildly unpopular athletic director at LSU.
What are you going to do?
But still athletic director at LSU. He announced he's stepping down, which is another way of saying shoved completely out.
And I looked at his resume. Has he ever been good?
I don't know him like that, but I know he is good or bad is debatable, but popular.
Not popular
at LSU at all.
All right.
And so I made the joke today, like, Will Wade's going to end up running the entire athletic department before we're done with this thing. And I don't think that's true. In fact, I know it's not true because LSU looks like they already had a deal in place to replace Joe Oliva. Scott Woodard, who is the Texas A&M athletic director, who just brought Jimbo Fisher there last
year. Big boy job.
And Buzz Williams there a few weeks ago. He's leaving at one SEC West school for another SEC West school. He grew up around LSU, so this is a little bit like getting back home. But LSU pushes out Joe Oliva. They are employing Scott Woodard. And now Texas A&M needs a new athletic director, it appears.
Story number three.
So I don't know much about the NHL, but this Tampa Bay Lightning story is getting a lot of attention because they just got swept out of the playoffs by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Are you familiar with the Columbus Blue Jackets?
Barely. I know they're not as good as the Lightning, and at least this year they weren't.
Well, no.
For the regular season.
Lightning finished with 128 points this season. They won 62 games, which is not only most in the NHL, it was tied for the most wins all time in NHL history. And not only did they get eliminated in the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, they got swept completely out of it. So obviously different sports, different deals. But think about it in these terms. If the Clippers swept the Warriors in the first round of the NBA playoffs, like what?
It's the comp.
Like
you're right.
You can't even imagine the Clippers beating the Warriors.
Right.
But imagine the Clippers sweeping the Warriors.
No.
That's what the Blue Jackets, more or less, just did to the Tampa Bay Lightning. So apparently, like that's they were the Stanley Cup favorites, the favorites to hold the trophy, yeah. And now they are eliminated in just four games. And so you can, I tried to read about it today to figure out what happened, and then I realized I don't know what any of this stuff means. I don't know what it means.
Whatever.
They're breaking down from a hockey perspective what happened to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I was like, well, this is a waste of my time.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're talking about. But I know that the team that was supposed to be the best is no longer in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And so now the race to the trophy is wide open or something. I don't know.
Story number four.
I got good news for you, Cowboy Carson.
What you got?
Christian Yelich did not homer against the Cardinals this afternoon.
And the Cardinals won the game.
Day baseball in Milwaukee. The Cardinals win it
6-3.
Hey, Christian Yelich.
We finally beat the Brewers.
Christian Yelich did go 1-for-3, had an RBI, but he did not homer. He homered last night, though. So I told you about it yesterday, which is why I brought it back up today.
Thanks.
He had he was entering last night's game having played five games against St. Louis, and he had hit seven homers, including three the day prior. Seven.
Why did they pitch
homers.
To him? Like, don't pitch to him.
At some point, you just got to stop pitching.
Don't
to him.
Stop. I don't care if it's the third inning. Stop pitching.
Like, it's time. Like pretend he's Barry Bonds and stop pitching.
He hit three home runs off you the other day in the same game.
So, in the first five games of the season against the Cardinals, he had seven homers. Last night was the sixth game against the Cardinals. Hit another homer.
Another bomb.
So that was eight homers in six games against the Cardinals.
Stop pitching to him.
Milwaukee won that game. And then, of course, they came out and played day baseball today.
Yeah.
And they kept him in the ballpark at least, and they got a win. So perhaps that's the secret to beating the Milwaukee Brewers. Try to keep Christian Yelich in the ballpark. And you know what comes next, right, Cowboy?
Well, we got the Mets.
Mets
are
in St. Louis.
Are you going?
We are going.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. Easter with Jacob DeGrom.
Awesome.
Who else would you rather? Actually, they just announced since we've been on the air, Mickey Callaway had not previously set his rotation for the weekend. Mm-hmm. He just set it, I think. So hoping to get
that'll be fun.
Hoping to get DeGrom and Thor on Saturday and Sunday. I don't really know what the order is. I'll look that up and then I'll get excited. The only thing I don't want to do is like go to a game and Jason Vargas is pitching.
Ooh.
I don't want my kids and their innocent eyes have to watch Jason Vargas pitch.
Yeah.
I don't want them to see that.
No.
I want them to see Thor pitch or DeGrom pitch, although DeGrom has not been good his last two starts.
No.
So
what's going on?
I don't know. There's some thought that he's tipping his pitches. He says he's just not throwing the ball where he wants to throw the ball.
Well, clearly. Thanks for the update bro.
I noticed that myself, Jacob, that you don't appear to be throwing
thanks
the ball
for that analysis.
Where you want to throw the ball. But either way, maybe he'll get it back together.
Maybe so.
What better place to get it back together than St. Louis this weekend? Jeff Calkins is up next.
Ask Alexa or Google to play 92.9 ESPN, WMFS FM and HD1 Bartlett, WMFS Memphis, a radio.com sports station. This is 92.9 FM ESPN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.